Calling all small firm architects. It's time to tap into your full potential with Entree Architects Context and Clarity, where inspiration meets innovation. Hey, it's Mark R. LePage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my two favorite co-hosts, Jeff Eccles and Katie Kangas, as they bring together authors, experts, and thought leaders for electric conversations with entrepreneur architects around the globe. It's not just a podcast. It's a community where dreams meet action.
There's a simple equation there. And what for me, what that did, just doing that basic calculation, was it allowed me to compare what I had actually saved in my retirement accounts to what I thought a possible projected annual spend might be.
Artists are temperamental, so beautiful design is going to be a priority. When the job is done, we're going to actually need to live in the house, not live with the person who designed it. And so for me, the artistic skill, the architectural skill is most important. And so I would say like that would be 60% of it, if not more.
Gain insights to build a successful practice. Subscribe, engage, and let's redefine your future together. Join the Context and Clarity community, where every conversation adds to your blueprint for success. We know that running a small firm is tough, and ending the year with a profit is even tougher. That's why we created Profit for Small Firm Architects. It's a 3-module digital course, and it's available to you free right now by visiting entrearchitect.com/free course. Entree Architect Podcast, episode 126. Welcome back to the Entree Architect Podcast. My name is Mark R. LePage, and this is the podcast dedicated to a successful life as a small firm architect. Whether you have plans to someday start your own firm, whether you're in the process of launching a startup, or you might be an experienced small firm architect just trying to make a difference, this podcast is for you. My goal is to inspire you to build a better business so that you may pursue your purpose with passion and live the life of your dreams. It's June, and all month long here at Entree Architect, we're focusing our content on the category technology. On the blog, here at the podcast, and inside Entree Architect Academy, we are diving deep into the many technologies that we can use to make our architecture firms run more efficiently and more effectively. This week, I invited the co-founder of a relatively new firm to join us to discuss the many technologies that he's using to launch his small firm. Danny Cerezo is on the show, and we discussed successful technologies for an architect startup. This episode of the Entree Architect Podcast is sponsored by FreshBooks, the easiest way to send invoices, manage expenses, and track your time. Learn more at freshbooks.com/architect. Danny Cerezo, welcome to Entree Architect Podcast.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you for having me. It's good to be here.
I love having you here. You're an architect based in the great city of Angels, Los Angeles, California.
That's correct, yeah.
And you are the principal and co-founder at CS Design.
Yes, that's correct.
So let's dive right into this. Let's talk about your origin story like I do with every guest. Go back to where you discovered the world of architecture and sort of what drew you to it, and talk a little bit about your journey to where you find yourself today.
I'll try and be brief, or else I can rant on forever. But I guess the classic late bloomer into my journey in architecture. I was born in New York City in 71, grew up in Brooklyn. My dad worked in the garment district in Manhattan, and I used to go there a lot and visit him with my mom, drop off lunch and things like that. And that's where I, you know, initially fell in love with cities and buildings at a very, very young age. And I knew right away that what I wanted to be was an architect. when I graduated from high school, I actually went up to Boston, went to Wentworth Institute of Technology, studied architecture there. Unfortunately, you know, I didn't take it very seriously. I was young and made a couple of mistakes, and I only lasted one semester. And so I went back home, and I was kind of wondering what I should do with my life. And I ended up joining the Navy. And it turned out to be one of the best decisions of my life. I was 19 years old at the time. And I wouldn't be a civilian again for about 16 years.
Wow.
Yeah. I was there quite a while.
Well, before we get any further, thank you very much for your service.
You're welcome.
The things you guys do let us do the things we do, so I appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you very much. While I was in the Navy, I was able to finagle a full scholarship out of them to USC in Los Angeles, and that was the first time I had been to L.A., fell in love with it, and I majored in architecture again. But this time I took it very, very seriously and, you know, kept my head down and graduated in 2000. But unfortunately, as you know, nothing in life is free. So although the Navy did give me a free scholarship, I did owe them a year for every year I was there. And that was a five-year program. So I had to go back for 5 years. And then finally, in the January of 2006, just a little over 10 years ago, I got out. I was done. I was 35 years old. I had no architecture experience, really, because, I mean, as soon as I graduated, I was gone within days. I had worked, you know, summers at, you know, at a firm here and there, you know, making models, you know, doing things like that, you know, that interns do, but nothing really serious. I decided to move back to L.A., and instead of going back home to New York, the weather was just unbeatable. So
yeah, I could imagine.
That was an easy decision.
Yeah.
And I got a job through an old professor at USC working for a developer who was doing a master plan community out here near Palm Springs. And that was really my first taste of development. I knew I kind of wanted to do some of that, but I also knew I still wanted to pursue architecture. So in 2007, I enrolled at Woodbury University's master's program, Master's in Real Estate Development, and that was taught by architects, and it was geared specifically for architects, including Jonathan Siegel, Ted Smith, Sebastian Mariscal, Lloyd Russell, those kinds of guys. And so 2 days a week, I would take a train down from L.A. to San Diego, 3 hours down, 3 hours up, and did that for a year. And finally, I graduated in 2008, and I had met a gentleman at the developer that I was working for, and I told him, hey, why don't we develop some urban infill lots? And he said, great, and who's going to be the architect? And I said, well, I'll do it. And he said, and who's going to be the general contractor? And I said, you know what, I'll do it. And I went out and studied for a weekend and got my GC license, passed the exam. And, you know, I hadn't had any architecture experience, but my last few years when I was in the Navy, I was a construction manager. I was in the CBs, and I was a civil engineer corps officer managing a facility out in Portsmouth, Virginia. So I did have a lot of construction management experience, so I felt that at least that would help us.
Yeah, you probably had more experience in construction than architecture at that point.
Yeah, you know, I mean, my days were spent RFIs, you know, punch lists, you know, dealing with pays and schedules and Gantt charts and, you know, all of that stuff. So it was kind of an easy fit. It was just more on, you know, the architecture side where I was lacking experience. Now, Pamela was an architect, or is an architect. At the time, she'd been working at a firm in Virginia, and she was working for a firm in Santa Monica as well. So she did have experience that actually I could lean on and kind of ask her questions and, hey, how do you guys do this? And what do you guys do when this has to happen? And so we started our first project in 2008, right when the crash happened. And we developed it ourselves. It was just a four-unit project because at the time I was unlicensed. And in California, that's the maximum you can do without a license is four homes at any given time.
And this was under CS Design?
No, CS Design had not been formed yet.
Okay. You mentioned Pamela, but you didn't introduce her.
Oh, Pama, for those of you that don't know, is my wife and my co-founder and partner in CS Design. Yeah. And yeah, we've been married 13 years and yeah, she's been fantastic.
So you knew each other during this development period?
Yeah, we met in college. Yeah. And so she knew that, you know, I obviously went into this development path, but she was working at a firm full time in Santa Monica, California.
But she was licensed, so you had a license if you needed it.
No, she was unlicensed.
Oh, she was not. Okay.
As well, yeah.
Got it.
So we ventured onto this four-unit project, you know, using all that knowledge that had gone down from Jonathan Siegel and all those guys. And one day in 2010, we were done. We finished our first project. We had our first open house. And in 2 days, they were all sold. And it was great. And I said, let's do this again. And we did another one.
Oh, this is so easy.
Yeah. And you know, and it was, you know, 2010, we still hadn't fully recovered. So we were a little nervous and apprehensive about what might happen, but it went well. And so we did another project. And as it happens, and I'm sure you know, you start meeting people, you start meeting general contractors, you start meeting bankers, you start meeting this, you start meeting that. And what started happening was that we started getting inquiries to perform architecture related services. People were asking, hey, do you do, you know, work on the side? And I was like, yeah, you know, sure, I could do that. And after a while, I was doing that late into the hours, weekends, and Pam wanted to move out of that firm that she was in Santa Monica. So that's when we decided, why don't we take the plunge, go all out. And in 2013, we formed CS Design. I had gotten my license the year before that. And I was 41 at the time when I got my license, 42 when we opened up CS Design, and I'm 45 years old now. But and I feel like I'm just getting started. I feel like I'm a 25-year-old out of college, you know, just getting things going, and I feel like there's so much to do. And ultimately our goal is to try to grow a design build architect or developer firm. And that's kind of my backstory, I guess.
Yeah, that's a very interesting story. So you sort of came around from the back, you know. You started with construction, and then those buildings were developing, and so the buildings you were developing started creating demand for your services as an architect.
Correct. Yeah, it's kind of funny the way things work out, but yeah, that's how it worked out, and so far it's been great.
And so your first project, you just went to a developer you knew and said, hey.
No, my first project was literally me and one of the gentlemen that I was working with at that development.
So how did you fund that first project? Because that's always the question.
Right.
Every architect has. How did you fund it?
And that's a great question. And in that particular case, it was all private equity. This partner that I had partnered with had contacts where, you know, where he knew where we could get the private equity to fund that project. And
it was investors.
So purely investors, yeah.
And he knew people out there with money, and those people invested in your project and got a return on it.
Yeah, there was no way anyone was going to give us a loan. It was, first of all, it was 2009 when we were starting, so everything was crashing.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't have a license. I had just got my GC license. Who are you guys? You know, that had to all be done with private investors, private equity.
Yeah, that's very interesting. The you and Pamela are partners.
Correct.
And you started a few years ago, 2013. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Talk about a little bit about the roles and the responsibilities that you each have as not only as architecture partners, but sort of outside of the firm as sort of, you know, firm and your family. How do you work that all out?
Right. Well, I'll talk about the firm first.
Yeah.
Given my particular experience that I'd had, I mean, having been a construction manager while I was in the Navy, I was an officer in the Navy, so I was used to running, you know, divisions of, you know, 40, 50 guys. I kind of naturally just moved into more of the managerial role, you know, dealing with clients, contracts, things like that, setting up, you know, the things that we needed, you know, back of house type of stuff for the office. Pamela is much heavier, a much better designer than I am, and more experience designing projects than I had. So it was natural for her to kind of take on more of those roles and responsibilities. And that's kind of how we divide it up. So she primarily runs the, you know, the typical SD, DD phase, CDs, all that other stuff. Obviously, I'm part of that. But she's primarily doing all of that while I'm doing all of the other stuff back of house. And, you know, we work out of our home office. In our case, we don't have any kids. So, our work-life balance is perfect. I mean, we get along really well. I mean, I think I wrote about this on a post that we're together 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. But it's great. And, we're able to separate the two. You know, once you kind of get into the house, we're in the house. You know, we're watching TV, cooking, going out, whatever it is that we're doing. And, you know, when we're in that home office, then we're in the home office. That's kind of how we divvied up the roles.
And working in the same space, side by
side. In the same space, side by, just maybe 6 or 7 feet away from each other, yeah.
Because you and I have very parallel lives. I mean, I'm married to my partner. You know, Anne Marie is, you know, for new listeners, Anne Marie McCarthy is my wife, and my partner at Five Cat Studio. And we have the same roles and responsibilities, you know, divided the same way that Danny does. You know, I do all the business and entrepreneurial things and management things. And Anne Marie does all the design. Again, you know, Anne Marie, just like Pamela, is a much better designer than I am. So, you go to the strengths and it works really well. Although one thing that's different is that I have my own studio. Emily has her own studio, which we learned very, very early on how to stay married. That's how you stay married. For any of those people considering that the idea of working with your spouse, I highly recommend two separate spaces.
Good tip.
But we do the same thing that when I'm in this studio, it's work. And when I leave the studio and I go back, commute up the stairs to my kitchen, it's, you know, I'm dad again and I'm, you know, a husband again. And so, and I have hours. I work, you know, the same hours that very different hours, but they're specific hours. The benefit of working within a home studio and virtually with staff is that I do have very flexible hours, but I work pretty consistently on the same hours during the day. So my kids know and my wife knows and the world knows when I'm working and when I'm not working. So speaking about home offices and sort of working remotely, do you have staff that you're working with? Do you have people that you partner with?
At the time, no. The only thing that we consult out for is making trips to the city, you know, permit clearances and all that stuff, just because it takes a lot of time and, you know, it's just not a good use of my time to be sitting waiting for my number to be called to clear some sewer permit or something like that. We get our renderings. We just started doing this, getting our renderings done by a guy we met on Houzz.com. And that's it. But everything else we do completely 100% ourselves. We're probably at a point maybe in the next 6 or 7 months where we may need to, you know, create our virtual studio and bring on our first person to help us out.
Yeah. And what type of work do you do?
Most of our for clients?
Yeah, for the architecture.
Most of the projects are residential. We're actually doing a couple of multifamily residential developments here in LA that we're actually investing in kind of, as you know, the architect as developer thing. I like to do renovations and additions. Pamela, not so much, but I like to do them. So we're doing a few of those. And we actually did our first TI a few months ago. Actually, we just visited yesterday, just wrapped up. We met with the clients. They were very happy. So a little bit of everything. Just because you know how it is when you're a young firm starting out, you kind of need to not be as choosy just because you got to put food on the table, keep the lights on, that kind of thing.
Diversify, yep.
That's right. That's right.
Let's take a quick break here to say thank you to FreshBooks for their support as a platform sponsor of Entree Architect. Because as a platform sponsor, FreshBooks has provided funding and support for our overall mission here at Entree Architect to become an influential force in the profession of architecture. They recognize the need for small firms to build better businesses in order to be better architects. FreshBooks is the easy-to-use accounting software designed to help us small firm owners get organized, save time, and get paid faster. It takes care of invoicing, expense tracking, estimating, reporting, and it all happens out on the cloud, so you have access to your information from anywhere that you have access to the internet. And as an exclusive offering for only the Entree Architect community, I've asked FreshBooks to join me on video and show us around the product. I know that once you see how easy it is and how simple it is to use, you'll convert to FreshBooks too, just like I did. Tim Lee of FreshBooks and I produced a series of videos, and they're available for you for free at entrearchitect.com/freshbooksvideo. entrearchitect.com/freshbooksvideo. And when you're ready to give FreshBooks a try, go to freshbooks.com/architect. freshbooks.com/architect and sign up for your free 30-day trial. It's free. Give it a shot. And be sure to enter Entree Architect in the How Did You Hear About Us section so that they know that you came from the Entree Architect community. June is Technology Month here at Entree Architect. All throughout the blog and the podcast and in the Entree Architect Academy, we're talking about technology all month long. Mm-hmm. What I was hoping that we could do is talk a little bit about the technologies that you're using to run your young firm. What are the things that you're using? So I thought maybe I could just sort of go through the list real quick, and then we'll go back and visit each one. Design software, project management software or technologies, accounting software, communication tools, you know, both internally, between you and Pamela, if it's more than, you know, turning your head and talking to her.
Right.
And externally out to your client base and marketing.
Right.
And then maybe some mobile apps and social media tools. And so let's talk about design software first. That's a big topic right now. We just had a big expert session in the academy for BIM. Mm-hmm. He was talking about Revit and how to use Revit. And so what type of software that are you using for design?
For design, we primarily use three pieces of software. I like to use whatever is best for the task at hand. Pamela's the same way. So, for example, for our renovation and addition projects, we use Chief Architect. That was something that we brought into the office earlier this year. It's just so well suited for that particular task. So we decided to make that investment. But primarily our design software is Revit. We've been using it, Pamela's been using it since she was at that firm in Santa Monica. We obviously have it. Pamela uses SketchUp a lot. So she will go back and forth. She will do all of her her designing, on paper and trace, and then bring it into SketchUp and play around with it. And then as she's going, she'll start going back and forth between SketchUp and Revit in order to document, what we're actually going to do. But, it's funny that you ask, and we had in the academy on the BIM yesterday, we're actually considering converting over to ArchiCAD at this point. Mm-hmm. We're a Mac-based office.
Yep, same here.
And so in order to use Revit, we have to use Parallels or Bootcamp. Bootcamp is just, we found it to just be a pain in the neck because all of our other apps are Mac-based. And, if we make the complete conversion over to Bootcamp, then we're kind of in a full PC world. And Parallels running Revit is just obviously not as optimum as running it on a full-fledged PC. Mm-hmm. So we've been talking to our Graphisoft reseller here in LA, and we're really considering making the plunge into ArchiCAD. But obviously, as converting from one piece of software to another is not a light task. There's a lot that goes into it. We have to both learn it. But that's kind of where we're at in terms of the design software.
Yeah, yeah. Inside the academy, on the forums, it's on fire right now. Talking about different tools.
Oh yeah, the Revit ArchiCAD wars too are very popular.
Yeah, I think there are a lot of small firms, sole proprietors, and small firms who are in that CAD to BIM transition.
Right.
And just the question on which one to pick. Just that question is overwhelming
That's right.
because once you pick it, you have to stick to it.
Yeah.
Or like you said, it's a big giant deal to switch right. over because you have to get yeah. retrained and, right. and it costs money. And,
yes.
you know, there's an investment there both in time and cost. And so just that question of which one's best for my firm is a big question that we're,
that's right.
that we're debating right now. And so possibly ArchiCAD is where
yeah.
you're talking
yeah.
about.
Yeah. Possibly. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. yeah. yeah. Interesting. What about project management? Once you sort of get it designed and you're working, you know, both with the architect as developer, as well as when you're working as an architect, do you have any special tools that you're working with?
We use three. Again, each one suited best for what we think is the task at hand. So for example, for overall project management, we use Trello. So we are creating our systems in Trello. We're creating our project templates in Trello, trying to identify, you know, the steps for each phase, you know, since a lot of what we do is repetitive. And so what Pamela and I do is we'll have a meeting. We'll go through our Trello cards, let's say for a specific project. Let's say we're in the DD phase and we know more or less, you know, the big strokes that have to get done. But then what we do is we use Todoist for the mm-hmm. actual task management, just because it's easy to get tasks in and out, you know, and I, at least we find it easier.
Trello has that capability as well, right?
It does. It
but
does.
But you find that Todoist is more efficient.
Correct. Yeah, we like to use Trello just for the big picture and then, you know, dig down with Todoist. Just because we were using Todoist before we were using Trello.
Yeah.
And so we're so used to it that, you know, that one's a little bit, that's a relationship we don't want to break yet.
Yeah.
And the other piece that we use is Evernote. We use Evernote for all of our scan. You know, they have a scannable app, which yep. If anybody doesn't know Evernote, I don't know if they developed that or maybe they bought it or something.
I think they bought it.
Yeah. It's a great app.
Yeah, I use it all the time.
Yeah. Oh, you can scan anything.
Explain how it works.
So you open up the app, and let's say you have a document, like sometimes we'll get corrections from the city. Actually, I just did this the other day, and I need to send them to the structural engineer. And I say, hey, here's the list of comments from the now I have a scanner in the office that we used to use. And, you know, you load the document in, boom, you enter in the email address, you hit the button, and it's almost like a photocopier and sends it off. The problem is that just kind of doesn't live anywhere except other than the email. So with Scannable, what you do is you open up your app, you hold up your phone on top of each page, and it automatically snaps a picture, and it saves it at, you know, let's say 10 pages. You give file a name, and you save it up to Evernote. And all of our projects, we have a folder within Evernote for that particular project, and so I'll save it to the folder. So not only do I have the ability from Evernote to then mail it out to the structural engineer, but I also am starting to create a kind of online file of all of the things related to that project. We use Dropbox as well, you know, in order to get our documents from hard copy to digital, that's our app of choice. It's fantastic.
Yeah, what I love about Scannable, in addition to what you just said,
yeah.
is that when it takes a picture, it's not a photograph. It actually
right,
converts
right.
it into a scan. So it looks
that's
like
right.
you just put it on
that's
a flatbed
right.
scanner and scanned it.
And, I think, it's searchable, right?
Exactly. And when it
that's
goes
right.
in, when it goes into Evernote, everything in Evernote is searchable. And so you can
right.
go to Evernote and you can search for any text that's on that document and it'll pop up. It's a great app.
If anybody's not using it, I would say pause the podcast right now, go download it, and then come back. It's fantastic.
Yeah, Danny and I are both Mac-based, so I don't know if they have an Android version of it.
Oh, yeah.
But they do have an iPhone version of it,
yep.
and
yep.
It's excellent.
And, you know, Evernote, we also use when I go out on my site visits. I have a site visit template that that I open up. I just basically change the date, change the project. You know, I'll type in, you know, when I get there, who the attendees are, and then I'll just start typing on my iPad as we're having the meeting, as we're walking around, and oh, you know, we need to do this, call this guy, do that, whatever. And if I need to take pictures of something, I can just, you know, hold up my iPad, take a picture, it goes right into the note. And usually by the time I get to my car, I just kind of check for typos and hit share and send. By the time I, you know, I drive away, everyone has a copy of the, you know, the site visit meeting minutes.
Yeah.
So that's another great tool. I mean, Evernote is fantastic. It's another one everyone should be using.
Yeah. You can also do audio recordings in Evernote, so you can speak to it. Or you could just use the iPhone voice to text
that's
feature.
Right.
So if you don't want to be typing while you're working, you can do your review on site and, you know, do voice to text and just talk about what you're seeing, and it will write it in the notes for you.
That's correct.
And then you just go back and edit it to make it sound, you know, more like it was written.
That's great. There's also one other tool, which is kind of a little bit more analog, a little bit more old school, that I use, that I recently acquired, which is a Moleskine. I'm sure everyone's familiar with the Moleskine notebooks. They just recently came out with a smart pen. So it's a notebook that's kind of tied to it's got some very digital fine printing embedded into the sheets. And there are times where I'm just doodling or sketching, or I just whip out the notebook and write. Maybe I don't have my iPad with me, or I don't want to use my iPhone. And that is connected to Evernote. So every page from the notebook automatically gets uploaded to Evernote. Again, searchable, including all of the images and sketches and everything that I'm doing. So that's a great little analog to digital tool that I just got it about maybe a month and a half ago, and I absolutely love it.
Yeah, so that's sketching with real pen and ink, right?
Yeah, it's just a pen, yeah. And you know, you're just drawing like we all used to do in the old days in your sketch. But now it's a specific sketchbook that's geared for this pen.
Right, but it doesn't look any different, right?
It looks like a regular pen, And once you get it into the app, you can actually change line weights, add color. It's a wonderful tool.
Yeah, so cool. We are living in an amazing time right
now.
For anybody, but for architecture and for creative people, the technologies out there every day get better and better for us. And it's so exciting to see what's out there and what we can do with them. What about accounting? Sort of go from the creative, wonderful, happy sketching stuff to the less happy, boring financial stuff. What are you using for
accounting? I use two. I use FreshBooks and I use QuickBooks.
Okay.
I use QuickBooks just because it keeps my accountant happy. He prefers. He's invited into it, and so he can, check my work, because I'm not a very good accountant. Actually, I'm a horrible accountant. But I love FreshBooks for the ease of use and its robustness. Clients can get their login page. They can come in, they can check, you can see retainers or invoices that they've received and paid. The time tracking capability is fantastic. Expenses are easy to capture on the fly with my iPhone, and I get them all in there. So I use it for that. And in order to avoid having to do everything twice, I have an account with Zapier, Zapier.com. It's kind of like IFFTT.
Yeah.
Or is it IFTTT? I always mess that acronym up. If this, then that. It's like that. And so, you set up these triggers, or they call them zaps. And so whenever I create an invoice in FreshBooks, Zapier will automatically create the invoice in QuickBooks. I don't have to enter it in twice.
Zapier, how do you spell that?
Zapier.
Okay, that's what I thought. Okay, so that's interesting. So that was going to be my question. Are you doing double input?
Initially I was, and I said, hey, wait a minute, there's got to be a better way. I knew that If This Then That was out there, and they didn't have at the time, or I didn't want to spend the time figuring out how to do the connection between FreshBooks and QuickBooks. So I did a little bit more Googling and found Zapier, and it's been great.
Yeah, very cool, yeah. Yep. What about communicating? What about communicating? Let's start with internally. When you're working with Pamela or at somebody else that you might be working with, consultants, what are you using for communication?
So, I mean, obviously internally in our case, we're literally right next to each other.
You
so all I have to do is reach over and say, hey, what are you doing? Or, what do we need to do? So that's easy. If I'm ever out of the office, I'll usually just pick up the phone or shoot Pamela a text.
Yeah.
Or something like that. But primarily we're using email with my clients since, you know, they're tend to be right around our age. They're not as wary of or weary of tech. I can send them texts as well. They all have Dropbox accounts. They have Evernote accounts. So it's really easy to invite them into this, that, and the other. Right. I have considered, utilizing Slack because it's such a great tool, but haven't really taken the full plunge into that tool yet.
Yeah.
What I like about it is that it would kind of capture everything. You know, instead of having things in my email inbox and some stuff in Pamela's inbox and another, in the structural engineer's inbox, it'd be nice to have one repository, and Slack seems to be able to offer that. So that's something that we're considering looking into, but we haven't really gotten into it. So mostly email, text, and phone calls is how we communicate.
Yeah, I love Slack. I've mentioned here before that I have four different Slack teams. I'm using it for the Entree Architect Academy.
Yes.
And then I use it also with the investment partner, Charette Venture Group, or my partner at Entree Architect,
right.
For the CVG team. And then I also use it for my firm, 5K right. Studio. So I'm working with my consultants and my staff with Slack. And then I recently put together a family team where I actually have my kids on it. And so, because we're always doing these projects, and it's a great way to sort of share links and take pictures and sort of record the whole project. And so we have our own LePage family team.
Let me ask you a question. When you decided to use it with your consultants, was that a challenge? Some of the consultants that I'm working with, talk about BIM, it'd be great to have, our consultants utilizing BIM as well, for collision detection and things like that. How did you find their openness to using Slack and things like that?
Well, I mean, the consultants like engineers and that kind of thing,
right.
they're not so interested
right.
in cooperating. I say consultants, I'm talking about, freelance architects
and
draftsmen who are, basically employees, right. but they're just not right. employees.
Right.
They're all on as part of the team. And so same thing with Entree Architect. I use it for the business of Entree Architect as well. And the team is all on it there as well. But, engineers and surveyors and things like that, they're slow to adopt.
Yep. Set in their ways.
Yeah. Architects are notoriously slow adopters. And then the engineers are even slower.
I will not disagree with you.
They will all catch up. And we talked about mobile apps a little bit. Do you have any other cool apps that you're using?
I use obviously Dropbox. I don't know how we would function without Dropbox.
Are you using Dropbox as your server?
That's correct.
Yeah,
everything. Everything that we do is on Dropbox. And like I said, when I use the scannable app, I automatically will save it to Evernote. And usually, what I'll do is I'll go to Evernote and just kind of download files and make sure that they get into the Dropbox folder as well. The other apps that we use are more related to our social media or our website. So, for example, Morfolio, that's a great tool if anybody's not using it. It's kind of like, how would you describe it? It's kind of like the old school yellow trace on your iPad. You can import, let's say, be on a job site or maybe at a potential job site. You can take a photograph using your iPad, and then you can overlay a digital yellow trace over it and then start doodling or maybe showing your clients potential ideas. That's a great tool. You can also measure scale. It's great. They have a pro version and a free version, I believe. And the other apps that Squarespace, sometimes we have a Squarespace hosted website. And so if I ever wanted to do a blog or something like that or something quickly, I can do it on my phone or on my iPad or just wait till I get home. But I mean, those are the biggies.
Yeah. The blog is how we connected. You connected on the Entree Architect Facebook page.
Right.
Or the Facebook group, actually, which is a private group for architects only. And it's so if anybody wants to join it, it's actually a really, really active group.
Wonderful.
It's entrearchitect.com/group will get you there. And you just ask for permission to join us. And if you're an architect, we'll say yes. And Danny's in there, and he's a great contributor, always posting interesting comments and posts. And recently started posting articles on medium.com, which is great. It looks like you've sort of split up your writing. So your professional, the writing for the profession, for the architects, is on Medium, and then you have a blog on your site that you also write for that's dedicated to your clients. And so you sort of split up your content. Talk about that a little bit and why you did that.
Sure. Yeah, that's correct. So we have a blog on the website. And like everyone says, you know, they always wish they could blog a little bit more. I don't know how you do it all. Frankly, you blog, the podcast, and the academy. So your days must be longer where you live.
I have the clone machine right over there.
I need one
in
of those.
The corner of the studio. There's 10 of me.
But so for the website, what we try to do is try to gear it towards clients or potential clients. So it's not as portfolio-y, if that's the right word.
I was going to suggest that listeners go check it out, because that's what I like most about it, is that it's not designed for architects. It's beautiful.
Okay. Thank
but
you.
But it's designed for your client.
It's
well done.
I try to give them options. You know, what are you doing? Are you doing a residential project? You know, we added the commercial stuff. And so it's geared towards trying to get clients to consider us. And so the blog is that way as well, just trying to give updates on what we're doing with our projects. I recently, Eric Reinhold gave me some inspiration to prepare a kind of design process guide, which I'm working on, which I'll have on our website also for potential clients. But then, you know, there was this part of me that where I wanted to kind of just talk amongst ourselves, you know, talk to the profession. And I don't know where I found out about Medium. I don't know where I was online in the rabbit hole somewhere. And I said, hey, this is a great tool. It's blogging. It's really easy. You know, I don't have to, you know, do anything fancy. I just start typing, really, and, you know, insert an image if you want. And then I said, well, you know, what do I write about? What do I want to talk about? And I just started thinking about a lot of the questions that I have been asked over the years by friends, colleagues, whatever, and just started writing about that. And so, so it's been great, you know, a little bit for ourselves and a little bit for clients.
Yeah. The posts on Medium are really great. And that's really where I really, you landed on my radar when you posted that first post in Medium. I don't know if it was your first post or not, but that was the first
one
I saw.
Yeah.
It's called 6 Things I Learned My First 2 Years Running an Architecture Firm. And then it's two parts. It's actually the bad stuff in the first section and the good stuff in the second section.
Right.
Really good posts. And then you also recently wrote about being a partner with your wife and how that works and your role and responsibility. Really interesting. And then this week is Architect as Developer. And I know you're going to get a whole bunch of traffic on that after people hear that, because that's what everybody wants to hear about.
Right.
So it's all about Architect as Developer. You can do it too, is what
you
wrote. And very interesting. And I love my favorite part of that article is the note before the article starts. The note says, for all you techies out there who might have run a search on Medium for Architect as Developer, this article is not about coding, Ruby on Rails, or developing your own app. This is about those other architects, you know, the ones who design buildings. But if you're curious, stick around. I love that note.
Yeah, you know, it was funny. Before I wrote that particular post, which I just did yesterday, I went on Medium and I did a search. I typed architect as developer, and everything that comes up is about a software architect or software developer. It's all about that. And I was like, well, if I do this, I'm probably going to get a lot of techies. They're going to come to check this thing out. And I just wanted to save them some time. So I put that note right up at the top.
I love it. And, you know, the architects complain about that all the time, that that other industries talk about, you know, use the term architect. And every time they do a search for architect, well, people.
The
search engines search for the most content. So the only way to fix that is for you to start writing about architecture.
Right.
Because the more articles out there about architecture and architect as developer and all those things, the more there is out there, the more will be found. And we won't have that problem as much as we do now. So I think that we're running pretty long on time here. So I would love to have you come back and talk about architecture.
I would love to be back. Yes,
because I know that everybody heard about architecture as developer in the beginning, and now here is talking about it at the end.
Right.
And they want to know more about it, and I want to know more about it because that's my future as well. That's where we're going with Five Cat Studio.
Absolutely,
that's our long term plan. We're right now in the process of transitioning from client based projects to that developer model. So awesome. I'd love to have you come back and talk about that a little bit, and maybe I could tell you a little bit about my thoughts, and you can sort of steer me in the right direction.
Sure.
So we'll have you come back. So Danny, I want to share some of your contact information with the community here. Your world on the internet is candsdesign.com. That's C-and spelled out, C-A-N-D-S-design.com. On LinkedIn, it's linkedin.com/in/DannyCerezo. And Cerezo is C-E-R-E-Z-O. On Twitter, it's @DCerezo_LA. On Facebook, it's facebook.com/CSDesignLosAngeles. And for all of those great articles on Medium, the newest one, Architect as Developer, you can do it too. Go to medium.com/CSDesignLA, right?
That's correct.
All right.
Yeah.
Danny, this has been a great conversation. I really enjoyed it. And
so did I.
I think we're on similar paths here. And so it's great talking to you. And I appreciate your time. And thank you for your service to the profession of architecture. And thank you for sharing your knowledge here at Entree Architect Podcast.
All right. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for having me, Mark. I really had a great time. I appreciate it.
Complete show notes and a direct link to download this episode will be found at entrearchitect.com/episode126. And I haven't done this in a while, but I would love for you to go to iTunes and rate and review the podcast. Go to entrearchitect.com/iTunes, and that will send you straight there. Just hit the star buttons and let us know how many stars you think we deserve and review it. I would love to hear a little bit about who you are and why you listen to Entree Architect. Just type in a couple of words there and let us know. By doing that, you're going to help us get the word out about Entree Architect Podcast, have more architects throughout the world learn about what we're doing here, and we're all going to grow together. So entrearchitect.com/iTunes, rate and review. And if there's an architect or an entrepreneur that you want to hear featured here at Entree Architect Podcast, I want you to tell me about it. Send me an email at support@entrearchitect.com, support@entrearchitect.com. Let us know who you want to be featured here at Entree Architect Podcast, because I want to be talking to the people that you want me to be talking to. I want to share the knowledge from the people that you want knowledge from. So go to support@entrearchitect.com, send us an email there, and let us know who you want to be on the show. And don't forget to grab your free course, Profit for Small Firm Architects, at entrearchitect.com/free course. It's free, but it's worth way more than free. It's worth hundreds of dollars. If it was sold on the site, it definitely would be at least $200. But I want to give it to you for free because I want you to learn how to be profitable. And I want you in our world of Entree Architect. You're going to get the newsletter. And every week I'm going to send you a newsletter and talk to you about what we're doing here. And I just want you inside what we're doing. So that's why I do that. My name is Mark R. LePage, and I am an entrepreneur architect. And I encourage you to get out there and share what you know. Thanks for listening.
From historic homes to modern architecture, brick is one of the most popular building materials around the world.
How to allow the house to bridge the gap between the history of the site, the approachability of this kind of architecture in this kind of neighborhood, and the sort of nostalgia of materiality for the client's past, right? And brick really started to provide an answer for that.
Hi, I'm Doug Pat, and this is Design Vault. There aren't many materials that easily blend with any style and context, but brick does just that. I've seen some extraordinary work with brick, so when Glengarry approached me about hosting this podcast, I couldn't say no.
Typically, Tudor-style houses from outside are just stunningly gorgeous piece of structure. And when you go in, it's just sad.
Yeah.
Dark. And that is not going to happen with my approach to design.
I speak with industry leaders and share inspiring stories behind their work and ingenious design.
You'll see brick that's fashioned into basket weave patterns, sawtooth patterns. What's known in England as diapering.
Doesn't sound like you knew them per se, right? They found you through relationships that you had with other.
Well, wait, Doug, there's more.
Okay.
We'll go behind the scenes to understand process and even the inspiration that sparked the design.
You know, I think we were inspired by all the factory buildings in Dumbo. I mean, that is the kind of period of significance, that early American factory building.
Design Vault by Glengarry. Visit glengarry.com/design-vault or search for Design Vault wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe now to stretch your imagination.
Attention architects and creative minds, get ready to supercharge your brand with Build Your Brand, the podcast that's unlocking the secrets of branding success for creatives. Hey there, it's Mark Arlepage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my friend, architect marketing expert, Jeff Eccles at Build Your Brand podcast, where he explores the captivating stories of the world's top brands and transforms their lessons into powerful moves for small firm architects and creatives like you. In season one, Jeff shares the thrilling tale of Southwest Airlines, where he dissects their journey to the summit and distills it into strategies tailor-made for you.
It's important to keep in mind that companies like Southwest compete in the real world, just like you, and face real-world challenges, just like you. You might be surprised at how similar those challenges are to the struggles that you grapple with on a day-to-day basis.
Don't miss out on your blueprint for success. Subscribe, tune in, and let's build your brand together.
You may have noticed that the very best brands in the world are also known for having somewhat unique corporate cultures. That's often the glue that holds everything together when they encounter those rough spots.
We don't do it because it inconveniences the passengers to whom we are primarily dedicated, the short-haul frequent flyer.
Follow the link in the show notes to subscribe to Build Your Brand today. Remember, no matter the size, the journey's the same. Your brand's journey to the top starts here.